Good morning. It's 8:18 a.m. and you are listening to Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka. I have two special guests in the studio with me this morning. I have Rabbi Ronnie Greenberg and I have David Volek. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Thank you for coming in. And we are going to talk about the holiday Purim.
That's right.
And maybe demystify some of the ideas of Jewish customs and holidays, because even in this day and age, it's still kind of exotic, I would think.
Yeah, I think Purim especially is a very exotic holiday for folks, even a lot of Jewish people. So I'm just going to give you a very brief historical background about where Purim's coming from, and then my friend who's traveled a long distance to be here with us in Sitka will kind of explain some more of the present-day significance of why we're still celebrating.
Great.
So we have to go way, way, way back into ancient Israel, and this was when it was a fully sovereign Jewish homeland, and there was a holy temple in Jerusalem, and an empire came and conquered. It was the Babylonians, and destroyed the first temple and sent the Jewish people or the nation of Israel into exile as kind of slaves. And that the Babylonian Empire lasted for a certain period of time, and eventually, as most empires, it was overtaken by another one, the Persians. And so the Persians kind of expanded their reach. It says in the Megillah, the Book of Esther, from Hodu to Cush. So it's kind of from Ethiopia all the way into the India and the Aryan Mountains. So it was most of what was known then as the civilized world, and it encompassed all of the Jewish people that were taken into exile by the Babylonians. And eventually a king arose, and there was like this prophecy that the Jews were going to be brought back into Israel by their ancient God of Israel. And according to his people's calculations, it didn't happen on time. So we had a huge celebration. The Jews' God had fallen asleep, or it was dead. It was no longer in existence. And anyway, I think it lasted 6 months? Is that right?
About 180 days.
Yeah, 180-day party. So we don't really quite know these days what kind of party that was. But long story short, there are some of the Israelites, some of the Jewish people attended this party, and it created kind of a spiritual problem in the heavens for celebrating the fact that their God had fallen asleep or passed away. So arose a very wicked man named Haman, or Haman, people are used to him, and he convinced the king to issue a decree that every Jew, man, woman, and child, would be murdered all on the same day. And he casted a lot on what that day would be. And kind of rolling dice or lots in Persian is Pur. So that's where the holiday of Purim comes from. I missed the whole part, but I don't want to steal too much time. But basically the king during this party summoned his queen, her name was Vashti, to appear to everyone. And he wanted to show off how beautiful she was. So she was only allowed to wear her crown. So you can imagine this is a little bit of a racy request, and the queen refused. She was deposed, and he had a huge beauty pageant throughout the Persian Empire to pick his next queen. And lo and behold, who won but this mysterious girl named Esther? And she was Jewish, but she did not reveal this to the king. Okay, fast forward to this decree. It was a very grave matter. Every Jewish person was going to be murdered on the same day. And her uncle Mordechai galvanized and awoke the Jewish people to do tshuva, which maybe if we have a chance we'll explain, but it's kind of returning to their roots. And through some palace intrigue and topsy-turvy moves, Haman's decree fell on his own head. And it was abolished, and Mordechai and Esther, especially Esther, saved the Jewish people. And so we commemorate this by having this celebration of reading the Book of Esther. But one of our most famous mystical rabbis has a saying. It says, whoever reads the Megillah or the Book of Esther backwards does not fulfill the mitzvah. So we've learned through this, what does it mean to read it backwards? It means to read it as some kind of ancient history that happened 2,500 years ago. Isn't that cute? Let's eat a humantashen, swing a grager, boo, humming, go home, right? So, you know, a lot of people think Jewish people reenact these holidays, Passover and Purim. Oh, they're so good how they keep their stories alive. But the truth of the matter is, if you're not living it today, you're missing the whole point. And with that, I wanted to ask my rabbi if we have some time to kind of explain what that means.
Absolutely. Rabbi Greenberg, could you expand on the significance of Purim today?
Sure. First of all, I would like to thank you very much for inviting me over here to take part in your radio program. I'm honored, and I hope that this will be an opportunity to bring some light on the meaning of Purim to us today. Like David just said, that Purim is not a commemoration, but it's something that we celebrate in our life. It's very real, and furthermore, it's even something that we, in fact, will take to the future. One of the things that our rabbis tell us is that when Mashiach will come, when the Messiah is going to come, all the festivals are going to be diminished. In other words, there's going to be a time that there's going to be a very great godly revelation in the world. This is the time when Messiah is going to come. God is going to be revealed. At that time, the festivals that we celebrate today are going to be somewhat diminished by the godliness that is going to be revealed. Like, for example, when you put a candle in the middle of the day, the light of the candle is somewhat, you can't see it because of the great light. All this will be besides the Festival of Purim, or more particular, the Book of Esther that we read, the Megillas Esther that we read on the day of Purim. And this is because Purim is actually signifies a tremendous great achievement of the Jewish people. One of the things that the Talmud is telling us is that when the Jews got the Torah, it was just the beginning. But Purim was in fact the acceptance of the Torah, which was given 3,320 years ago. How is that? The reason is that when God gave the Torah to the Jewish people on Mount Sinai, in some way it was forced upon them. God revealed himself to the Jewish people, and they have felt the great love that he has for them. And when he asked them, do you want to accept the Torah? So in some way they were sort of forced to say, of course, because it was so encompassing, this love of God. Now what happened is that when Purim came, it was totally different situation. The Jews were persecuted. It was a time that they were spread all around the world. Like it says in the Megillah, they were in 127 countries. And they were all separated among the nations. And it was very difficult for them to keep Judaism, to keep their mitzvot, and to keep the Jewish customs. And right at that time, they came to the hardest moment where they were, in fact, persecuted. And like David said before, they were just about to be killed. At that moment, they had to make a choice, a tremendous choice, whether to disappear completely, to convert and disappear among the nations, and then no one is going to know who is Jewish and who is not, or to come out and say, yes, I am Jewish, and I'm proud of being Jewish, and I want to keep my Judaism out in the open, and I'm going to show everybody that this is who I am. And in fact, that's the choice that they took. They came out and they decided with a tremendous self-sacrifice to become more observant than before, to become closer to God than before. And that self-sacrifice saved them from that persecution. That closeness to God that they had, in fact, brought them to a much, much higher level than even the time that they got the Torah. That was the real acceptance of the Torah.
Let me ask you a quick question. I'm sorry. We have a party coming up, and there's a tradition to drink alcohol or, you know, and get to the point. What's the famous saying? And if you could explain that quickly about that.
Okay, so now in our days comes Purim, and we are celebrating it. Was doing several mitzvot. And one of the most strange mitzvot or customs that we have to do in Purim is, as David said, is to drink, to become drunk. But this custom is actually even stranger because, you know, a lot of people get drunk for good reasons, for bad reasons, you know. But here we have, it's becoming like a commemorating a festival. Now, furthermore, it says that we have to become drunk so much that we don't know the difference between cursed be Haman, that's the wicked guy from before that David mentioned, that wanted to kill the Jews, and blessed be Mordechai, that's the holy guy that David mentioned before. That's the guy that actually succeeded together with his niece to make the Jews come back to their God. So how could it be that we are now celebrating Purim by drinking so much that we don't know the difference, so much that we're not going to know the difference between cursed be Haman and blessed be Mordechai, which, by the way, there is a very neat trick to this. In Hebrew, the words cursed be Haman and blessed be Mordechai have actually the same numerical value. If you would take the letters and you transfer the letters into numbers, which is what is called in Hebrew gematria, you'll find that both have the same numerical value, which is another strange thing. How could it be that cursed be Haman, the wicked, and blessed be Mordechai, the righteous, would have the same value? And here we go, we have to drink so much that we don't know the difference. So the answer to this is that the whole purpose of creating the world, that God created the world, is actually expressed in the festival of Purim, which is the what we call transforming the darkness into light. The whole purpose of evil, of bad, like some people might think, would be to get rid of it, to destroy the bad, to destroy the evil. But the Torah is actually teaching us a higher level. The higher level is transformation. Take the darkness, take the evil, and make it good. One of the ways, one of the examples that we can see that is, in fact, in our society today, if someone is caught doing a crime, usually what we do with him is put him in jail. But putting him in jail not necessarily actually achieves anything. The only thing that we achieve is, you know, avoiding a problem. But a better solution would be is to take that criminal and teach him to become a prosperous human being, a good human being. This is what we call transforming the darkness into light. That's the whole point of Purim.
So thank there you. You have it.
That, I wish we had. I had scheduled a two-part interview. There's a lot of information to be had. Thank you, Rabbi Ronnie Greenberg, for coming and speaking with us today. And you were visiting all the way from Morristown, New Jersey.
Correct.
Did you come all the way just to be with David?
I came all the way to be with David and to be with the Jews of Sitka and to be with all of the people of Sitka to celebrate this special Purim, special festival, and to what we call bring godliness into Sitka.
Thank you very much. And thank you, David, for joining this morning as well.
Thank you for having us.
I'm sorry we ran out of time.